Gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of to view us on YouTube Live, listen to us on the Global Star Radio Network and Blog Talk, that's BTR. All listening venues, you can just go to HagmanReport.com, and how to listen is right there. You've got numerous options. I want to thank Todd from Global Star Radio for working around the clock, as he does. And for carrying our program. And I want to thank the fine folks at Blog Talk Radio as well for carrying our program and for believing enough in us to carry our program. And I want to thank each and every one of you out there who are listening and watching. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. I'm going to kick it over to Joe here momentarily where he'll give you the lineup for tonight. Just to remind people, we broadcast live every weeknight. That's 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. A couple of things I ask that you would do. First of all, if you go to HagmanReport.com, please bookmark HagmanReport.com and Hagman and Hagman.com. Both those sites. Please bookmark them. But we have some very talented individuals who have submitted some just incredible works to HagmanReport.com. John Robertson, for example, our program director, producer, is just a very talented writer. John Rappaport and others. Sergeant Tim, for example. And Sergeant Tim is... When he retires from the military, he'll be using his full name, but for right now, that's how we refer to him. And others. And visit their websites as well. The original documents. Okay. Or the original source. I'd also like you to go to CanadaFreePress.com. That's CanadaFreePress.com. I wrote an article this morning. It's called No Ma'am. It's not bad piece. It's only 500 words. You can go to Canada Free Press. And what I'd like you to do is just leave a comment. I don't care if it's just boy, you really stunk up the place with that article comment, or it doesn't matter. The traction that we need, and I ask that you do this for all articles, not just mine, but engage, become engaged on the internet. And the reason I ask this is because we are faced right now with a level of censorship, despite Trump being in the office. This is day three, and I'm going to congratulate Donald Trump and his team for making it, for ascending to the office of the presidency. And apparently, he hit the ground running today. We saw what he did on Saturday with his visit to the CIA. It's customary. Everything that you're seeing take place, with the exception of his own initiatives, are customary. For example, visiting the CIA. I mean, it's pretty much planned out for you. It's kind of a turnkey operation. This is what you do on day two. This is what you do, and so on. So a lot of what you're seeing is not his initiative, except those executive orders and the actions and the impromptu press briefings and such. Those are his. But the ceremonies, the pomp and circumstance, the meetings and all that are pretty much planned out for him. But the reason I brought this up, and again, I asked Joe if I could take 5 minutes, and he said sure. So I'm going to take 5 minutes. I just want to give a little bit of my heart to the women who are listening to this broadcast. And I looked at her demographics, and I think 47% of our audience is female. It's pretty close, half and half, male and female. 47% female and 53% male. I believe it's how it works out. But regardless, this message is for the women who are listening to this. And I don't care if you're 15, 50, or 85, or 105. I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for being the woman that you are. Thank you for being classy. Thank you for being strong. Thank you for supporting your husband, if you have one. Thank you for not succumbing to fear. Thank you for being passionate about for the truth. Thank you for being warm and genuine and kind, funny and smart. Thank you for understanding that you have a job, a role, a job to do and a role to play in these times in which we live. And I'm not being smart about this. I'm not, this is not satirical at all or anything. I did write, again, I wrote the article, No Ma'am, that appears on HagmanReport.com. I'd like to see it get some traction because I think it's kind of funny, just myself, but I think a lot of things are funny that others don't. But it talks about the women I'm not referencing. And you know, I just want to say thank you, not just the listeners, but I want to say thank you to the women in my life. Publicly, I want to publicly thank my wife for being classy and dignified and supportive. And I want to thank Mrs. Stephen Quayle and Mrs. Pastor David Langford, Kim, and all of the women that I know personally. You're dignified. And of course, you know, Mrs. Dr. Ted Brower, and you're dignified. You're classy. You're true. I'm impressed. I'm impressed by each one of you. And you know, what I saw this past weekend broke my heart, because I realized that there is such a failure of the man, of men, in my generation and generations subsequent. There's a failure to lead. There's a failure to protect. There's a failure to guard the most precious people in our lives. And guys, if you're listening to this, this is my message to you. I would hope that you would stand as a protector and as a loving protector of your wife, of your daughter, of your sister, of your mother, whatever. As is biblically mandated, I would ask that you be the man. Because what we saw this past weekend, Saturday, we saw a group of degenerate, classless, undignified, repulsive women and tremendously emasculated men gather together in multiple cities, Washington and all across the United States, for this march, this woman's march on Washington and other cities. And it broke my heart to see these people. It broke my heart to see the children that were present, that were subjected to the profanity, subjected to the lack of leadership that these women obviously need. You know, sometimes we joke about the estrogen soaked streets and such. But there's an obvious failure of leadership that's represented in that march. But instead of focusing on the debris, and that's the only thing I can, the only thing that comes to my mind is really the debris, human debris, the morally and spiritually bankrupt people that lined the streets, that had no clue why they were there, or if they did, they had no idea that they were succumbing, or that they were being subjected to lies upon lies upon lies. And it's the duty of the man, I believe, if the women had true men in their lives, that march would have not taken place. The women that were involved in that march, in coordinating that march, there was four. I was on with Dave Hodges last night, and I named them, but I'll just name them now. Tamika Mallory, Carmen Perez, Linda Sensor, and Bob Bland. Yes, Bob is a female. I had to double check that. Not Bobby. Bob Bland. Seriously, not transgendered.
No, I know.
Okay, no. With respect, and I'm issuing a couple of reports on this, and I'm, by today, maybe you may think, oh, well, you know, why even bother? There's so much more news to really talk about, but here's the deal. There were over 400 partners, in quotation marks, two big sponsors, but over 400 partners involved in the planning and setup of that march. Soros obviously has ties to over 56 of them, of the partners, of the money behind the women and the, or whatever you call them. The two platinum, or the two big primary sponsors, are Planned Parenthood, obviously, and the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is nothing more than, in my view, a communist front. Linda Sensor, just so you know, the one of the primary event planners for that march, is the head of the Arab American Association of New York. She's responsible for the school closures for two Muslim holidays. She's Palestinian. She's Islamic. She's pro-Sharia law. And she tweeted out in 2015 that she would like to see Sharia law all across the United States. And of course, hinged her tweets upon the fact that Sharia would bring interest-free laws, or interest-free economy in terms of lending. Meanwhile, there was a young lady in Prescott, from Prescott, Arizona, and let me see if I when I read this and when I was looking at this, my heart sank about this. This young woman in Prescott, Arizona, and forgive me, I don't have her name right handy. Her name, I think it's Kayla. I'll be writing about it. She was a nurse, and she went over into the Middle East to help the wounded. And this is in 2015, I believe. She went over to Syria, and she was kidnapped by al-Baghdadi and made his sex slave and ultimately killed. And I really want people to understand this. The primary sponsor of that march yesterday, this Linda Sensor, this woman, when this Kayla from Prescott, Arizona, was kidnapped and brutally raped and made a sex slave, this Linda Sensor blamed Kayla, or shall I say, let me be more accurate, blamed the victim, or appeared to blame the victim, in a series of communications and postings and publications saying that Islam is not at fault here, but suggested, of course, the victim was to blame in this case.
Typical liberal fashion.
Yeah,
sadly.
And I'm going to ask Jackie here to grab my notes from my office at some point, so I could do the proper thing and give her name and the circumstances of her kidnapping, because I think that this is important to understand that this is the mindset, the intellectual scope of these people, what's behind these marches. And then again, you've got Planned Parenthood. I started off kind of slow and deliberate, intentionally, because I guess at the very heart of all of this, what really matters, I believe, is the preciousness of the women in all of our lives. Their bravery, their support, their loving touch, their role as moms and as wives and grandmas. I mean, how important is that? You've got the most important job in the world, and to see that sullied by this group of feral, immoral people yesterday or Saturday, it just saddens me.
I saw a lot of pictures, some videos of the different protests and the people who attended the protests, and it was pretty disturbing. I mean, you had the feminist protesters partnering up with Satanists, partnering up with different groups from, videos where they're calling each other comrade, and it was a shame. It was a shame.
You know, and I try to lighten it up when I wrote that 500-word op-ed piece this morning, you know, No Ma'am, making a reference to Al Bundy, Married with Children. It's the first thing that came to my mind, the Amazonian masterhood. If there was a caricature of what happened, that would be it. But yeah, you're right, Joe. I mean, it's sadly, this is just,
And one of the comments I saw of people commenting on different articles and pictures was, these people don't even know what they're protesting.
Exactly.
Which got me to think, and I was thinking, how many people are going to go somewhere, go out into a big crowd, big city, to protest for something they don't know what they're protesting? I don't believe that to be the case. I believe that they were protesting some, either if it was based on misleading information, or they had their own, personal area that they wanted to protest. I think what people meant to say was it's not a big of a protest about or against Donald Trump. I think that was the reason that a lot of them got together. But I can't see these people just protesting unless it was just solely on faulty information.
Well,
they went for support. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
When you look at that's a good point, because a lot of those women out there, the most vulgar of the vulgar, holding up, I can't even, and I'm not going to say the words or even describe the pictures, but a lot of them had to do with the female reproductive system, and obviously mm-hmm. the hats.
And some of the way they dressed, I mean, they're half nude, on their chest, and words on their stomach and arms, and
I'd be passing that out burlap, really. I mean, I was almost gouging my eyes out,
Well, I don't get it. If they're, a lot of their messages are,
these aren't women. These are not women.
Eric is, some of the women had it written on their stomach, my outfit is not an invitation, period. And then, but they were like half nude or, it didn't make sense to me. I don't get it.
Well,
I don't get the mindset behind.
I have a saying, you can't argue with crazy. Okay. That's why I don't even engage crazy. I've had a number of people send me emails saying, why aren't you defending yourselves against certain accusations that are out there against me? And because really it's an exercise in futility, because number one, if people really knew, if people really had the facts, in my case, in our case anyway, they wouldn't be making the statements. Number two, it's difficult to be rational with someone who is inherently nuts, crazy. This is my personal opinion, by the way.
Or outright just lying and making things up,
right,
or whatever
right.
the reason.
So it's to me, you just roll with it, because you know, it doesn't matter. But getting back to the point real quick here, and because I know we've got a good lineup, I just want to make sure people understand that a big part of this, what's behind all of these movements of late, refusefascism.org, the street level, and folks, you can verify this, but the street level protest organized by refusefascism.org, especially the previous week with the protests at the inauguration. Now, the initiators include, but are not limited to, people like Bill Ayers, Carl Dix, the founding member. Everyone knows Bill Ayers, but Carl Dix, the founding member of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA, Robin D.G. Kelly, Fran Luck, P.Z. Myers. And I may be publishing these names. Yusuf Salem. Does that name ring a bell? Yusuf Salem?
I don't know if
Cat Stevens.
Cats in the Cradle.
Yeah. That Yusuf Salem. Okay. And filmmaker David Zeiger. Just to name a few. And very quickly, while everyone's focus was on this march, did you know that David Brock was having a meeting down in Florida? David Brock, for those of you who don't know, just very quickly, is, he's the head of a group called Media Matters for America. It's a liberal news media watchdog. Share Blue, which is a liberal news media site. American Bridge, which is the Democratic Party's primary opposition research organization, which is involved in sliming Trump and people. And the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, known by the acronym of CREW. Well, this past week, from Thursday last until Saturday, Brock assembled about 120 people down in Florida. In fact, at the Turnberry Isle Resort in the Ventura, Florida, that's where he was at, which for this weekend conference. Representatives down in this, at the Turnberry Resort, included various attorneys general, state and federal officials, representative from four major labor unions. You had that Stephanie Shryock of Emily's List, Cecile Richards of Planned Parenthood, Elise Hoag of NARAL Pro-Choice, as well as NARAL Pro-Choice, as well as the five candidates who are vying for the head of the DNC. They all met in a Turnberry Resort, Isle Resort in Ventura, Florida. Brock is attempting to assemble attempting to put together this initiative to impeach Donald Trump by any means necessary, and is also getting the $40 million together to fight his initiative.
You know who's funding that?
Do tell.
George Soros.
Of course he is.
He has been linked already to funding trying to impeach the President Donald Trump, which is no surprise, and there's already been I don't have the information in front of me, a lawsuit filed against Trump,
yes,
which is related to his business dealings and receiving foreign payments while sitting as the president of the United States and the owner of companies. Now, I'm sure if there is any wrongdoing just from him being in that situation, he'll take care of it, I'd imagine, based on
real quick,
what we've seen so far.
This, I just going back to understand the significance of where this meeting is being held. Remember Gary Hart from the 88 elections, presidential elections. The CIA, there's a criminal element or cabal within the CIA that's run by the State Department, and it's kind of an off the books part of the CIA. It's not your CIA that you saw Saturday. Anyway, they're heavily involved in setting people up and setting people like Gary Hart up. Remember Monkey Business, Donna Rice, way back when. Well, I'll be doing a report on this and a video report on this. But Joe, I'm sorry, I took up a lot of time.
No, it's fine.
Guest coming up is
it's good
because
I don't want to get into this until James is with us. I will just briefly mention a few of the executive orders that Trump signed today, which is the first one is most important, and kind of where I think we'll start off with James is withdrawing the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership under executive order. He was able to do that because the TPP was not ratified by Congress under Obama. Therefore, with an executive action, he could do away with that. Two, he froze all federal hirings except for the military. And then three, this was an interesting one, he cut all foreign fundings for NGOs, two NGOs, for those NGOs who practice or promote abortions.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, and when we come
he's
back...
He's keeping his word, at least now, right?
Well, the TPP was a big one.
Yeah.
The abortion, I think, the cutting the foreign funding of abortions, I think is...
Step one.
Testing the ground to see how much blowback he gets.
Okay.
The federal funding was something that he said he was going to... the federal hiring freeze and the cutting of business regulations were two things that he said he was going to do on the campaign trail a lot. He talked about gutting a lot of the regulations, government regulations pertaining to businesses. And I think that's one of the next ones he's going to do. And he, from the headlines, it says up to 75% of regulations he wants to cut. So we'll see where we go from here. And we have a half hour at the end of the show. We'll kind of recap and get into what we didn't get into in this segment. When we come back, James Corbett from the Corbett Report. You can go there now, thecorbettreport.com, or his YouTube channel, Corbett Report, right after this. Stay with us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We got a treat for you. You all know this man by reputation, by name, and I'm sure you've seen his great work as an independent media citizen journalist, whatever you want to call him, just a tremendous researcher. His name, of course, James Corbett, the Corbett Report or CorbettReport.com. And I just want to introduce him by way of this very quickly. You know, a big issue over the last couple of months has been Pizzagate. If you go back and if you look at the Corbett Report at CorbettReport.com, it's two T's. In fact, the link is in the program description, but if you look at his work, at the investigative work product that he's done along with Sybil Edmonds, Wayne Madsen, and others, you will see that James Corbett, our guest right now, had been investigating this and had been identifying this and offering a great, rich investigative work product long before the word Pizzagate was ever known. And just uncovering and exposing the evil and deeds of darkness. This guy, to me, is the real deal. I like him a lot. James Corbett, Joe, I'm going to kick it to you. You can bring him on.
Yeah, well, I want to just comment on one of the better YouTube videos I've ever seen, which Mr. Corbett created, was the title? The Conspiracy of 9/11 in 5 minutes?
9/11, a conspiracy theory.
9/11, a conspiracy theory. Folks, if you have not watched this video, it's five and a half minutes long. It is very good, and I've been following it ever since I saw that video, and it's great to have you on the show, Mr. Corbett.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
And folks, I want to tell you, Mr. Corbett is traveling. He's making so gracious because he's actually talking to us from Japan, where it's 9:30 in the morning over there in Japan. We've got a lot of listeners over in Japan as well. So I appreciate you joining us on,
well, to be clear, I'm not traveling. I live here.
Why didn't I know that? I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I thought you were trying. Okay. I apologize. That's right. You know what? Never mind. I'm going to blame it on age. Well, regardless, let's get into content. Your work that you've done is tremendous. Here we are, day three of the Trump presidency. Mr. Corbett, what do you, What do you focus on right now? What do you think? What's your kind of assessment of the landscape as the American landscape?
Well, to be fair, I come at this as an outsider. Obviously, I'm a Canadian. I live in Japan, so I can only view it from afar. But from this distance, it certainly looks chaotic, I think would be the word to use. No matter which side of whichever spectrum you might be on and whether or not you support this Trump presidency or not, I think everyone can agree that things are in chaos right now. And I argue that it's a generated chaos. In fact, I just wrote an article about this for the International Forecast, Chaos Out of Order, because we've all heard of Order Out of Chaos, the 33rd degree Freemason victim, Ordo Ab Chao, to bring a new order. You know, you use chaos as a way to get people to want the new order. Well, in order to get people to that point, you have to generate the chaos. And I think we're in a position of generated chaos right now, and that's part of what's happening right now. So we're seeing the complete meltdown of the international monetary order, the international financial order, the international political security order, and then domestically also breakdown of societal order, all happening at the same time. And it's, I don't know about what your perception of it is, but certainly from my, where I'm sitting, things are getting crazier and crazier, and the craziness is actually increasing. The acceleration is happening right now. So I think this is all towards the installation of a new order. And you can't bring in a new order without getting rid of the old order. And that means all of the old verities and pieties of the previous order have to go, including Pax Americana, including the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency, including all of these things that we've just taken as the base way of understanding the world for our entire lifetimes are starting to be chipped away at right now. And it's a very worrying thing, but it can be a positive thing, because certainly we do, I think, want to transition off away from this old order, but we don't want the new world order that they're trying to bring in as a result of it. So it is, it's a time when everything that we think we know is liquefying, and that can be very freeing, but it can also mean that there's a new order that they're going to try to impose very soon.
Yeah, we totally agree. And that's been a subject of ours for quite some time. Now, you've done so much great investigative work about so many things, it's hard to like pin anything down.
I got a first question. Yeah, just based on what you said, James. The populist movement and the election of Donald Trump, is this a continuation of the globalist plan, or is this something that came out of left field from your analysis?
Well, I don't subscribe to the grand unified conspiracy theory that everything is controlled by a couple of men in a room. I think there are certainly forces who have a great degree of control over what's happening, but I don't think they control everything down to the micro level. But they can certainly play off of societal factors. In fact, I think that's the primary way that people in positions of power do maintain and leverage their power, is by playing on things that are already happening and things that they can already use that really do exist that they can leverage. So if there is a reaction against the sort of globalism that they've been shoving down everyone's throat for the last few decades, then they'll try to find a way to use that reaction to their benefit. And again, it's not that there's one single power that directs all of this. I think there are different cliques that war with each other to a certain extent, but they of course all want control of America Inc. or the World Order Inc. So they're all, none of them want to upset the apple cart, but they all want to have control over that apple cart, so they might war with each other. So for example, we see Kissinger meeting personally with Trump on multiple occasions and coming out just a couple of weeks ago to say, hey guys, guess what? Don't expect Trump to follow through on all his campaign promises. I've been talking to him and I think, he's getting up to speed on things. So we can see that some of the old cliques are circling around, and whatever kind of drain the swamp campaign rhetoric was being used was jettisoned immediately upon the election when Trump said, the Clintons are a great family. I'd love to take advice from them and all this sort of thing. So I think Trump supporters are going to be deeply disappointed, assuming that they face the reality of what's happening. It doesn't mean that all is for naught, because I think the idea, the base of this, the political populism that you identify there, is a real phenomenon. And there are good aspects to that. There needs to be a revolt against the order that they've been trying to impose on the world for the last few decades. It's just a question of who directs that and in what way that energy gets released. And if it gets all shunted back into federal, you know, national politics, and everyone, you know, let's all rally around the flag and rally around this president no matter what he does, then it will all have been for naught. But I think there's at least a chance to use this energy, and if we direct it in the right way towards the right topics, towards people actually taking matters back into their own hands, their own life, finding ways to organize with each other in communities rather than looking to some political messiah to come down from on high in Washington, D.C., if we can do that, I think there is a chance to use this moment of kickback, of revolt, in a positive way.
You know, you mentioned, you know, the continuing push of this New World Order to disrupt our economy, taking the world off the world reserve currency, taking the U.S. dollar off the world reserve currency status, continuing their push in any way, in any area they can achieve it. What do we expect to see with this continued growing political divide in this country amongst the citizens? It seems like from the Obama administration, the divide really started. He continued to push it and not address it and not unify the country, not attempt to unify the country. Now we have what seems to be capitalists versus communists, anarchists versus conservatives. And it seems like the rhetoric's getting more intense and violent. The actions are becoming more violent. Do you see this trend continuing throughout the near future?
Well, I wish I didn't, but unfortunately, this is a process that feeds on itself, and it's very difficult to put the brakes on once the ball gets rolling. And the ball is definitely rolling, as you point out. I mean, every single possible divide is being played onto the maximum now, black and white, and the difference between the sexes and sexual orientation, and all of this is being pushed on, and the divide, the wedge, is being driven further and further between people. So that people, of course, identify their neighbor as the source of their problems rather than, you know, the institutions which have been put into place to rule over them. And that is the fundamental problem. It's been the fundamental problem throughout the entirety of human civilization. Divide and conquer is a very, 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 very old principle that's been well established and well understood for thousands of years. And think of how much more refined that technique has become than it was, say, a couple of thousand years ago when it was first being worked out. So I think it's not an easy thing to, even unless it is explicitly identified and understood for what it is, it's extremely difficult to put the brakes on, because certainly when someone pushes the extreme, you feel compelled as a human being to want to go the other way, to resist against that. That's the obvious thing. So when people are pushing some obvious agenda down your throat about some ridiculous political correctness and pronouns and things and what you can and cannot say, as people know from Jordan Peterson's work in Canada, they're now trying to outlaw certain pronouns that can or cannot be used in the classroom and things like this. When people push kind of extremist nonsense down people's throats like that, the natural reaction is, okay, let's push against that, and that's where people's energies and time and attention gets directed. And so what is the answer to that? The answer has to be stepping out of that. Clearly, people are being pushed into a dialectic. Choose this side or choose that side, but just choose a team and war with each other. And there has to be a way of finding, once again, community. I keep coming back to this because I keep thinking of things, the situation we're in right now. I think there is parallels between the ways that the great powers are aligning themselves right now and the way they were in the run-up to World War I, which is quite worrying. But economically and financially, there are parallels with the Great Depression era, the Great Recession era of the late 20s, early 30s. And in that time, especially in the United States, think about how rural a society it still was. There still were communities at that point. Think about that being transplanted into 2017, and think about the way that community would break down in an instant if there was a serious and fundamental disruption of the economic order. And that worries me, because we're already seeing chaos and violence and people at each other's throats. Throw in a little bit of economic chaos, and I don't know if there's a way to stop the civil war at that point. So I think the real focus has to be in the creation of community now, while there's still the opportunity to do so, so that those community structures will see people through the turbulent times that are absolutely coming.
No, I agree with you 100%. That's something we talk about in the show a lot. In any type of societal collapse, whether it's economic or just a civil collapse, it will only, people who band together and form these communities will be, in my opinion, the only chance to survive these things. You're not going to be able to do it alone. You need people with different areas of expertise. You need people working together to accomplish many things. And without that, just on survival alone, you know, the odds are astronomically stacked against any individual or pair of people who try to do that.
Well, if I can jump in here, James, if I can ask you a question here. Obviously, you talk a lot, and folks, our guest is James Corbett, the Corbett Report, open source intelligence news, his website, CorbettReport.com with two T's, linked off of HagmanReport.com, also in the program description. And I would highly recommend, of course, supporting James's work, and please support via his button there, support his work via Patreon. Right there, you can click on the button and, of course, do that. But James, of all of the threats facing Americans today, from your perch outside of the country, what do you see as the biggest threat internally? You mentioned economic. You mentioned, of course, the number of things. But what do you see taking place here? What will fracture first, in your view, based on your recent research?
That's a good question. I understand why you ask it, but I don't know if it's answerable, because all of them are so thoroughly intermixed that really, I mean, no matter whether the disruption comes through economic disruption or monetary disruption or some sort of societal disruption, some sort of, you know, riots of, you know, left and versus right or whatever it is, or whether it comes from some sort of international incident, I'm not sure that the first domino to fall is particularly necessary to identify which one that will be, because as soon as it falls, I think the others will fall with it in rapid order. And we also have to keep in mind that the powers that shouldn't be always love to blame economic disruption on some foreign boogeyman in order to launch wars. This has happened throughout history, so I think, again, no matter what happens, it will all happen in short order. And that, again, it's very worrying, because I do see the parallels leading up to what we saw in 1914, and it's very difficult to imagine a way forward from here that does not result in some form of warfare. But what warfare actually looks like in this day and age is really the big question, because I can't imagine it will look anything like what we saw in previous wars. It will have to be something completely different, and will probably be more obviously based on cyber warfare or financial warfare, trade warfare, which can be equally, if not even more, devastating in the long run, especially to civilian populations. Think about how far we are removed from the idea in, say, 18th century warfare, where people would go and take a picnic to watch a battlefield, because you knew, as a civilian bystander watching from a few miles distance, you're fine, and it's just two armies battling on a warfield. Think about World War I, World War II, suddenly civilians are being bombed, and it's coming home. Now think in this current era, where cyber warfare takes place, and cyber terrorists or whatever are taking down electrical grids, suddenly it is primarily civilian populations that are affected. So that's my particular biggest worry, I think. But again, in terms of which disruption comes first, I think I'm not even sure that's necessarily important. I certainly do have my eye on the economic disruptions that are very, very possible, because I think that's one of the easiest and most straightforward levers of control of the old power elite. I mean, even if we were to take Trump seriously as a true and genuine independent threat to the establishment, this billionaire who has come down to, you know, lead the country into promised land of milk and honey, still the Federal Reserve has an incredible amount of control over the economy, not only of the United States, but the entire world. And if they start jacking up rates too quickly, they can absolutely suck the money out of the swamp, all of the heroin, basically, that they've spiked in the punch bowl over the last 8-9 years can be drawn up very quickly, and it can cause the type of economic disruption that no Trump or anyone else would be able to do anything about if they get that ball rolling. So again, unfortunately, it's extremely easy to create chaos, and they're always trying to position themselves to benefit from that chaos.
You're absolutely right. James, if we can kind of switch gears here, I want to talk about the media. Now, I know, you know, you said you were in Japan, and do you see a lot of U.S. media? Do you make it a point to see it?
I pretty much only watch online media. We have a television. We don't have it even hooked up, so we don't really consume media in any other way. So what I watch is primarily American, Canadian, other types of English language media.
And you've obviously seen the mainstream media's coverage of Trump, and the reason I ask is because I wanted to get your opinion on. You know, after he gave his inauguration speech, Rachel Maddow and Chris Matthews said it was a dark and militant speech. They called it Hitlerian. Just the attacks that are feeding into this political divide that we talked about earlier. And I wanted to know how that differs from Japan and what perception you guys are getting there as opposed to what's being told to the people here in the U.S.
So just to be clear, that's the same Chris Matthews who got the thrill up his leg when mm-hmm. he saw Obama speak 8 years ago, right?
Yep. Yeah.
How does it differ from Japanese media? The Japanese societal context is so completely different because Japan was called by one of the administrators of the American administration here after World War II as a nation of children. And unfortunately, to a certain extent, there is something to that. It is very much a society where people are told what to do and generally will go along with it. And that means that there is a lot less societal friction here. There, you don't see a lot of riots and protests and police state kind of goons jumping around with their jackboots or anything. It's a much, much safer, I suppose, in that sense. But of course, it does mean that people are easily, if not easily indoctrinated, at least will go along with whatever is societally expected. And that creates a situation where people, I mean, still, there seems to be a lot of naive trust and faith in a lot of the media here. And to the extent that people disbelieve what they're seeing in the media here, they'll generally keep that to themselves. So it's a very different context, but it does mean that certain narratives can be pushed quite a lot more easily than they can be pushed in a place with a more independent mindset like the United States, where at least people understand that they're getting a certain line, they're getting a certain view. When you tune into Rachel Maddow, you know what you're going to get. Whereas in Japan, I think people just assume that there is some sort of objective viewpoint that people can report from.
And the reason I wanted to get into the media is something you said earlier about the New World Order agenda, the globalist agenda that piggybacks off of real events, real things that are happening, and it's not so much a, you know, top-down conspiracy controlled by, you know, one mind or one person. And the reason I wanted to ask that is because here there's just been a huge disconnect. It seems like many in the mainstream media have just completely stopped objectively reporting facts and now bring you the news with their own or their producer or writer's own twisted ideology into it. And it seems to be a growing trend that's just happened as of late since the fake news narrative came out and since so many people came against Trump with either lies or what they perceived to be the truth. And there was some fact in there from Trump's own comments, but I mean, it just seems like everything's being made up and then that made up story's being given to the people, being given to news reporters, to the point where it's almost like they believe it themselves to be true, regardless of the facts that are given. And I just wanted to kind of get an idea of what the international perception of Trump was.
Well, you identify an important point there, because we are absolutely, of the many transitions that we're undergoing, one of them is a fundamental transition in the nature of the media and people's relation to it. And in previous generations, people would look to a Walter Cronkite or whatever to tell them that's the way it was. And people would generally would take that as the daily news. Of course, we can't do that in today's context, even if we wanted to, because it has become so polarized, so obviously propagandistic. Now, that's a transition, I think, that's taking place in people's understanding of what media is and how it functions, and I think it is necessary. We're going from the naive belief that there is some sort of objective viewpoint that some angel on the clouds is going to report the daily news from, whereas, of course, we now know, for example, I mean, on Walter Cronkite specifically, he was he was a committed globalist who said, you know, if that makes me a devil, then I'm happy to sit on the right hand of Satan. Ha ha ha. And things like this. I mean, that comes out, you know, decades later at the end of this person's lifetime when people have been listening to them as some sort of objective news point for their whole life, or, you know, being the voice of the owl in Bohemian Grove and the crazy rituals that go on there. So we have to understand that there is no objective viewpoint. Even choosing what is or is not worthy to talk about on the news is itself coming from an ideological perspective. Now, unfortunately, people, I think, still believe in the idea of objectivity of media, but we're seeing this hyper-subjectivization of it, this hyper-partisan nature of reporting that's coming along. And so people are still caught in the mindset, okay, well, everything that comes from the media is true, except for those liars out there, those ones on the other side of the political spectrum from me. They're liars. The ones that I see are telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And so it creates this hyper-partisanship within the society itself. Whereas I think what we need to do is break down that barrier and realize that everything that you are seeing is coming from an ideological perspective. And once you understand that, then you can separate out the facts that are being talked about from the perspective that those facts are being nested inside. And once you do that, I think people can have a more healthy relationship to whatever media is. But unfortunately, again, just because of the technological advances that have been made, media has been becoming more and more ever-present in people's lives, intruding into people's innermost thoughts, to the point where people find it difficult these days to go outside the house without something plugged into their ears to listen to. It's everywhere and always and constantly the voice in our ear. And that's worrying, because, of course, that is the primary way that propaganda can be inserted. And we are losing that space within our own minds just to have quiet contemplation that would have been the norm even a couple of generations ago.
James, we got about a minute and a half before the break. After the break, I got some questions talking about the trade deals and the a few other things. Can you talk about, we'll start here and we'll pick up here on the other side, your latest episode, Obama, A Legacy in the Ashes?
Yes. Well, Obama, what can you say about Obama that hasn't been said, except for the, yes, what I wanted to point out in that episode of my podcast was not just the lies themselves and the hypocrisy, which, again, is pretty easy to point out, but what it really means underlying the sort of Obama himself. I wanted to point out that it wasn't Obama as a person individually that was the source and font of all evil in the United States. It was what he represented and the interests that he fronted for. And since we now know through leaked emails that, oh yeah, the head of Citigroup actually picked his entire cabinet before he was even in office. He had it all picked out, and he chose from the list that Citigroup provided for him to pick his cabinet. That shows you something more fundamental about the way power operates at the highest levels than we elected a president and now the president will lead us. That is the naive point of view.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And unfortunately, you know, what Trump brought to the table and the movement that got behind him, I do agree with. At the same time, I'm very hesitant. And many people seem to have just let go and accepted that Trump's the new president and everything's going to be, you know, great and rainbows and unicorns.
Well, we're being played in so many levels, you know.
Right. And people are let their guard down. And I think that's a dangerous place to be in. But when we come back, folks, you're listening to James Corbett at CorbettReport.com, as well as James Corbett or Corbett Report on YouTube also. He'll be with us for the next segment. So when we come back, we're going to pick up right where we left off. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.